To show you.
About this fucking lame ass movie, honestly.
Oh, I forgot. Oh, I totally forgot that Webster's not joining us.
Yeah, I know.
That just hit me like right now. I'm like, wait, we're missing fucking Webster. Oh, right? Oh shit.
We're running October, baby. All right, we're the new blood. We're the new blood for this year.
That's hilarious. That is good.
Huh? That's a transition.
It certainly is. Shit.
Oh, all right. You ready for this?
Let's do it, man. Fucking do it.
All right. New blood. That's right, baby. The bloodline. So, gonna pop in the next podcast.
Oh, my God.
She'll start off, and then we're gonna be like, ooh.
Dude, that's crack comedy, dude.
Oh, Jesus, okay.
I can be J-O-S-O if you want to be Cody Rhodes, man.
I'll take Cody. All right, I'm good. Cody's my boy. All right. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Horrible Peoples Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Fuentes. With me, as always, is Phil Acevedo.
Hey, what's up, dude?
Yes.
Seen any new blood lately? God, that was terrible. That was
okay. That was so I'm not even cutting it. That's going to stay.
Good. I expect nothing less.
Now, if you hear a difference in podcast introduction, yes, Miss Webster is still gone again. She's actually off looking for the lost book of Hamanacha. So she will be okay. Your fate is in her hands, but I think she's got this. I think Imhotep's going to fucking step on the wrong lady.
Tell him the truth, man. Just tell him the truth. We drove her to the desert, and we left her there. She's buried in one of the Las Vegas. She's buried next to Joe Pesci.
Next to Joe Pesci.
In Casino.
And his brother.
Yeah. Oh, such a brutal scene.
To be fair, we got her out there because of the book thing. So, you know, that's kind of... still could be looking. It's fine. But we're talking about two way better movies than what we're watching today. So what are we covering today, Phil?
Oh, we are covering none other than Friday the 13th, Part 7, The New Blood.
That's right. We haven't done a Friday the 13th episode since last year's really good Jason Lives. Now, if you followed any of our episodes... the odd numbers are almost never good. So, this isn't that different. I'm sure you have thoughts on it as well. But yeah, you want to bring us in on the credentials here?
Absolutely. As we mentioned, Friday the 13th, Part 7, The New Blood, released in 1988, right?
Yeah, 88.
And it was written by Manuel Fidelo. I'm going to say it with the accent. And Daryl Haney?
I love that. Haney. Manuel Fidel. And Daryl Haney?
And Daryl Haney. And this bad boy is directed by Jean-Carl Buclay.
Buclay.
There you go. And The New Blood stars Lar Park Lincoln, Kevin Blair, Susan Blue, Terry Kiser, maybe. Kane, and Kane Hodder.
Ooh, Kane Hodder. Kane Hodder's the boy.
Hotter he was. there's my gay joke of the year.
I'm sure there's plenty more. I forgot to include this detail. Okay, real quick production detail before we get to the box office.
Oh my God. Real quick. Yeah, that's right.
Fun improvisation one here. I forgot to include this. Sometimes... this particular movie is called Friday the 13th because so many of the male stars in this movie ended up coming out as gay mere years after this one. So, Phil, your instincts are spot on for this one. Yes.
Oh, thank you. All right. I called it, man. Called it. The gay door is switched on, dude.
For sure on this one, yes.
Oh, it's Friday the 13th, man. Let's have fun.
Let's
do
it.
Any IMDb synopsis for this one?
I forgot that. Thanks, Phil.
Oh, it's all good.
Gonna pull that up right now.
You want to just pull it up right now?
Let's go. Yeah, go for it. I'm doing it. Yes. What's the box office say while I'm Googling
here? While you do that, I'll get you some box office info here. I just noticed that too, so you're good. You're good. Here, I'll get you box office info right here. The budget for Friday the 13th, Part 7, The New Blood, is a whopping $2.8 million. All right, and it grossed just a little over $19 million. Dude, so for this being released in May 13th, 1988, dude, they made $17 million, so that's a good come up.
Definitely could have been worse, but it does also, I don't know, we're going to get into how the studio interpreted those numbers. And of course, IMDb tells us about this movie. Jason Voorhees is accidentally freed from his watery prison by a telekinetic teenager. Now, only she can stop him.
It is an accident. Okay, all right, that's an okay. That's fine. That is a synopsis.
I mean, there's not much story here, so I guess that kind of makes sense.
It really is not.
No, it's a thin one. It's a thin one.
Yeah, it really is. I think IMDb did its best it could.
Yeah, I'm with you. So, of course, happy Friday the 13th, everybody. And I was, of course, born on a Friday the 13th, which, you know, I will always emphasize.
Were you?
Yeah, I was.
Oh, nice.
I was born
very
on Friday,
cool.
A March Friday the 13th.
Nice, I like that.
We're getting another one in 2026 when we cover Jason X. So, see, there you go.
Can't wait, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's a Jason movie I'm super hyped for.
Yeah, and of course that's gonna be a good one. Now we do have another Jason X, of course, was followed by Freddy vs. Jason, which the seeding of that actually started with this particular film. So you know, let's learn, because this is technically was supposed to be the first Freddy vs. Jason, right?
Oh.
So despite having fantastic fan reception, Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives, it didn't do so hot, actually. It actually made the least amount of money of any entry in the series so far up to that point. And the world clearly was not ready for the meta horror found in the sixth entry. They would get that about less than a decade later with Scream. So, you know?
Yeah.
Bunch of fucking peasants. Anyways. Unfortunately, going back to the regular formula wasn't going to work either, as plenty of slashers were already repeating the formula by, of course, the late 80s. The one did stand out, and Paramount thought they'd make a great foe for Mr. Voorhees, and that was Freddy Krueger. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is when the creativity started getting a little thin.
Interesting.
So, the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise, it was actually at its peak. So producer Frank Mancuso Jr., who we've covered plenty of times on these episodes, he decided to give Jason Lives director Tom McLaughlin another shot to redeem himself by working on this crossover with New Line Cinema. Of course, a rival studio at the time when Hollywood was not so privy to making these kinds of deals. So,
yeah.
80s. Now, McLaughlin, he didn't really have any ideas for how the story would work, but he was given enough time to think about it while the team was actually trying to iron out, you know, the details. But, of course, this is Paramount. There we are, selfish fucks here. Paramount actually wanted to have complete creative control over the project and handle the domestic distribution, giving New Line the, you know, illustrious responsibility of promoting this film to worldwide audiences, where 80s horror notoriously had a really tough time. So, yeah. I don't know. I don't think they wanted to nail this one.
It sounded like they did not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, tread water.
Interesting. Very. Yeah. No. It's all good. I mean, this was the 80s. Paramount, New Line, rival studios. They weren't as open as collaborating as a lot of studios are these days right now.
Mm-mm. It's definitely not like a Sony, Disney, Spider-Man scenario here. It wasn't happening yet. Mm-mm.
I know New Line and Warner Brothers work a lot together. You know, they produced like the Hobbit films together.
Oh yeah, like that's because New Line was going bankrupt though. See,
They
were making too much money here. Making too much money.
Yep.
The house that Freddy built. That's right. But yeah, New Line Cinema, obviously, as we're talking here, very quickly turned Frank Mancuso Jr.'s ass down, citing that Freddy was bigger than Jason, and of course the studio knew it. So, and he was way fucking bigger, and of course. Yeah. Tom McLaughlin, this is very interesting, sticking to his horror comedy instincts, he actually made one more pitch based on characters Paramount actually owned. He wanted to take the Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein approach, but modernized for the Friday the 13th franchise and 80s audiences. So he proposed a Jason Voorhees crossover with Cheech and Chong.
No way.
Bro.
Are you kidding? I never knew this.
Nope, that was
this is
his
insane.
Pitch. Yeah, with Cheech and Chong. Mm-hmm. And of course, no way. Oh, dude, that would have been amazing.
Can you just imagine, dude?
Bro.
Say, hey, dude, look outside the window. I think that's Jason. Oh. And that's my Cheech impression. I can't do it.
He's like,
yeah, man. Yeah, man. Yeah, I think that's Jason right there, man. Yeah.
I think that hockey mask, you can use any of those holes to smoke out of, right?
Is that a joint, man?
Oh, it's a machete. Oh,
oh, it's a machete. Dude, run. Yeah, no, man. Yeah. Run, dude. Run. Yeah, dude.
Oh yeah, my
brother,
god.
They, just dude, run, man, run.
They would get high with Jason so much. It'd be awesome. Mm-hmm. Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, but unfortunately,
The theme song. Oh, yeah, I just had an idea. I'm sorry.
No,
the theme
please.
Song would be chong chong chong. Chong
chong chong. Chong chong chong. Oh my god.
That
gosh.
Would be the theme song right there, dude.
That
boom. Damn.
Would be I would have loved to make this movie in the 80s. Amazing. Oh, and they're all smoking with a bunch of teenagers and getting killed. They're like, hey, what happened to Julia, man? She's
oh
just getting
God,
fucking murked.
Dude.
Oh, okay. Oh. See? Okay, this is stupid.
This is great.
Yeah.
This...
Mm-hmm. Fucking Frank Mancuso Jr. shot this idea down immediately. He really didn't want to do any of the comedy stuff because, what do you call it? Last one didn't make that much money. But honestly, Phil, this is brilliant. We can keep pitching this. This is a good one. it's okay. I have more on that discussion.
I hate to AI something right now, but this would be something that you can easily do with AI right now. Just type in Jason Voorhees with Cheech and Chong, and I'm pretty sure something will
do
pop
it,
up.
Phil. Fucking do it. Yeah. I know.
I'll think about it.
you know what, though? If this actually came to fruition, this would be one of the movies that I would have watched a million times as a child because I've watched a lot of Friday the 13th and I watched a lot of Cheech and Chong. Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Same. Likewise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so yeah, McLaughlin, he left the series to direct the romantic comedy Date with an Angel. So, you know,
okay.
Big pivot in the career there. And producer Barbara Sachs, she was brought in, to change the direction of the franchise. And she had big ambitions here, Phil. Friday the 13th was no longer going to be some schlocky horror franchise, according to her. Nah. It was going to be elevated.
There it is.
Yeah.
There's
mm-hmm,
that word, baby.
Mm-hmm. They did meta horror first. Now they want to do elevated horror. Yep. That's exactly. They were ahead of the game. They just kept shooting themselves in the goddamn foot. Anyways, because this didn't work out how she thought it would at all. And of course, it didn't help that producer Barbara Sachs actually very notoriously hated horror movies. So,
ooh.
I don't know why you'd be hiring these people. They don't like the fucking franchise.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. If you don't like the product, if you don't like the galaxy, then why work in it?
Ah, job, money, Phil, money.
Money, baby. I was just about to say, money, baby.
Here comes the money.
Right. dollar. Shane O'Mac. All right. So, Jaws or Carrie, as my title says. So, Sachs enlisted screenwriter Daryl Haney to work on an outline that was very, very anti-capitalist and would borrow heavily from Steven Spielberg's Jaws.
You fight the man.
The movie about Jaws, not, you know, actual Stevie's, you know, Jaws, like his physical Jaws.
They see
the
that
shark
smile?
Movie.
You see that smile over there? Turn that into cinema.
In this outline, a very 80s corporate yuppie would come to Crystal Lake and start building condos on the property, much to the dismay of the locals who thought such an act would prompt our hockey mask clad killer to return and start, well, you know, killing.
Yeah, that's kind
of
what he does.
The developer would also cover up the stories of the murders, giving Crystal Lake a clean reputation and a steady stream of bodies. This kind of sounds like, this pitch right here kind of reminds me of like Gremlins 2 a little bit, with a yuppie corporate dude trying to take down, you know, or like, throw that with a little bit of Fern Gully and you, boom, you got this pitch right here.
Oh, good. That's such good comparison. Now, also, what you got to do is have this story outline and then throw Cheech and Chong in there.
Beautiful.
That's
boom.
Such a good story.
You got yourself a movie right there.
Oh, my God.
I'm so upset that they didn't go with this route.
Honestly, that was heartbreaking when I read that detail. Way more than an early Freddy versus Jason in their peak. I'm more like, fuck, come on, dude. Ay, Mancuso.
Well, needless to say, the climax was with the female protagonist trapped on a boat or helicopter or something difficult to say because writer Daryl Haney didn't really believe in the concept at all that much, and neither did series shepherd Frank Mancuso Jr. How do you pronounce that name?
Frank Mancuso Jr.
Mancuso. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And so he straight up hated this idea and asked the team to scrap everything they've worked on so far and start all over again.
Ay, ay, ay.
It's got to be brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And this, of course, during a rapid-fire pitch meeting, she had actually turned down nearly all of Haney's ideas. But the last one stuck when Haney said, quote, I notice that at the end of these movies, there's always a teenage girl who's left to battle Jason by herself. What if this girl had telekinetic powers?
Oh.
Boom.
Shit. Barbara Sachs is like, all right, I'm getting a little excited from that one. That's good. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. This is straight up just giving me the YouTube channel's pitch meeting vibes.
Bro, this is total.
He's like, this is the producer guy would be like, oh, isn't that gonna be kind of difficult for Jason to just leave one teenage girl? Oh, actually, it's gonna be fairly easy, barely inconvenience. How's that? Oh, it's because she's gonna have telekinetic powers.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, there you go. That's how it solves it. Boom.
Maybe we can actually get Carrie as the consul. Well, that would be way too expensive.
Oh my god. Oh my god. So, continuing here, thus the Jason V versus Carrie concept was greenlit. Though it wouldn't be, of course, Carrie White exactly, since Paramount didn't own those rights either. Rather than do business with Stephen King, they simply ripped off the idea and changed some small details for the finished product.
Oh,
can you imagine, dude? Can you imagine if Stephen King's like, yeah, go ahead. And you know what? Why don't you get, are you guys still looking for a director? Because I'm really good friends with Brian De Palma, who directed Carrie. He could probably do this one for you.
Oh, De Palma's sequel to Carrie with Jason Voorhees would be so goddamn good. We were coming up with great ideas.
I know. Where were we in the 80s? Oh, that's right.
We were sperm when this is being fucking made.
We were in our daddy's nutsack, dude. So it was here where Barbara Sachs was still obsessed with the idea of this Friday the 13th winning awards and decided that since she couldn't get a high caliber script, she would get a high caliber director to helm the project. Fwentzer, please. Elaborate a little bit on this part right here, please.
Well, it wasn't Brian De Palma in his Carrie versus Jason, you know.
Damn it.
I mean, it wasn't. I'm sorry. Yeah. Although, again, he would have killed that. Would have killed.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. No, but this wasn't an Oscar production. This was a fucking rush job. Anyways, Sachs went after a series of, in their words, quote-unquote classy directors, and was getting turned down constantly. We don't know the full list, but one director who was heavily, heavily courted was actually Federico Fellini. Fellini was like their number one. Now, of course, this obviously didn't work out. Mr. 8.5 definitely turned their asses down. But troll director John Carl Buechler, he signed on. He was down.
Man, they were really aiming for the stars with Fellini for this.
Oh my, they were, right? Because, like, Fellini's he's a fucking legend.
Yeah, dude. I mean, he was already in his twilight years here. You know, he's already, like, a very, very old man. But, like, dude, he would have, I don't know, a Fellini-directed Jason movie?
That's a lot of jump cuts. Some good ones, though.
That would have been very interesting. I don't know. Interesting is probably not even the... Man, that is ambitious. How about that?
Ambitious. Very I say ambitious also, yeah. Obviously, yeah. Martin Scorsese was busy also, so they couldn't get him either.
Yeah.
That would have been, oh my God, fucking Joe Pesci versus Jason would have been fantastic.
Oh my God. Listen here, you mutter and stutter prick. You only exist out here because of me.
Hey, I think this guy would make a great enforcer. God. How do you think? You think he should be part of our crew? Jason joins force with the mob.
Oh my god!
Our ideas are so good. Sure. He'd be a great muscle.
I know.
Wow.
Love that. We should really write some of these ideas down.
We're recording them. AI will help us. Yeah. AI is going to help
there
us.
You go.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The far less ambitious Buechler, actually, he was brought on board for his expertise with special effects makeup, most notably working Ray recently on Reanimator. Yeah.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. And he was also, unfortunately, he very openly hated slashers. And, of course, the slasher formula. But The story was different enough for him to consider the gig. Now, speaking of this story, this is good old Hollywood shit right here. The team had screenwriter Daryl Haney. He did up to 15 rewrites of the script to nail the Jason versus Carrie elements. And when it came time to pay his ass, his contractually obligated $30,000, he was fired. He was just fired.
Wow.
Yeah. It is speculated that, yeah, his agent may have tried to get him more money for the amount of work that he was actually doing. But either way, a mystery writer took over under the pseudonym Miguel Fideo.
Oh my God.
Yes.
So that, what the, this is bizarre.
Yeah, I know. This is Friday 13th, baby. Just listen to all of our episodes. Yeah. They're all fucked up behind the scenes. It's great.
Jesus.
Happy holidays. Yeah. Now, the rumor going around town is that the writer actually had very legitimate, prestigious writing credits, but he really wanted some quick cash, and for this particular Friday 13th movie to not appear on their resume. That's what we know. Prominent writer, needed the money and didn't want their name associated with this bitch at all, which it seems like nobody did. So, you know?
Yeah.
But all these setbacks put a lot of pressure on the team, which now only had 6 months to produce the entire film to make the May 13th, 1988 release date. Because all they had was a script that everybody hated. So, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
That's a lot. Yeah. Well, and of course, the film was being cast under the name Birthday Bash. And,
oh, my God.
This is because of this, producers actually almost cast the lead character of Tina with an actress who had already been killed off in an earlier movie. Yeah. And of course, they actually did that twice. But, they cast Laura Park Lincoln, who had actually, she just worked on this movie called House 2, The Second Story. I don't know if you've seen the House movies. I haven't seen them.
I've seen the first one.
Yeah.
I honestly thought there was only one.
I mean, the second story is a pretty good subtitle, though.
Yeah,
I'm kind of really with that. Though. I'm with that. Yeah, and that one actually was produced by the original creator of Friday 13th, Sean S. Cunningham. So you know, she did some connections there.
Okay.
But yeah, they did this again. One of the actresses who actually had been killed off in the second Friday 13th movie was also cast before she had to admit that she had already been in the series before they let her go. So you know. Fun times in Hollywood. But of course, they did have their knockoff, their Carrie knockoff. They finally had a story after 15 rewrites and, you know, I'm sure an Oscar caliber writer trying to get their paycheck. And they also had a director who was well versed in horror despite not being a fan of course its most popular subgenre. Now, all they needed was a Jason Voorhees, and they somehow ended up with the most popular one in the entire series. So, hey, there you go.
Okay.
All right, Phil, how'd that happen?
Oh man! First of all, I was just really curious when back to the House 2 scenario.
Yes,
I thought we were talking about the Japanese film House.
No! And, this is a whole different one.
I was like, wait a minute. That's why I said I thought there was only one. And I was like, there was a sequel, and then the second story. I was like, well, yeah. I mean, that makes sense too. But then I did a quick Google search, and so apparently there was another film called House that came out in 1985 that in America it has no affiliation to the Japanese flick.
That's good because that movie's brilliant. Yeah. I love that movie.
I know. That movie's I know I'm fairly new here, but there is an episode on this, right?
There absolutely is. Movie? Yes, yes.
Okay, for sure.
Yeah, me and Webster, that was a pandemic episode actually.
Oh, really? Nice. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Yeah, I love that fucking movie, man. But okay, well anyways, so, enough of leaving a house. Let's enter hotter.
Oh, that transition, Phil. Oh, my Lord.
I don't know. Thank you. I try.
I like that. I like that one. I don't know.
Director John Carl Buchler.
I'm going to change it up every time. That's perfect.
Buchler. Let's just give him let's just change it every time. He already had a Jason in mind. Much to the dismay of Jason Lives actor C.J. Graham, who wanted to be the Jason Voorhees.
Man, C.J. Graham was good, though. He was a good Jason, but, yeah.
In Jason Lives, right?
Yeah, is that, yeah.
Is that, Was that the only one he was,
that was Jason it. In? He was the only one, yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a good Jason in that one. Yeah.
I agree.
Buechler already had an actor in mind, Kane Hodder. And the duo had, of course, already worked together on the film Prison, where Hodder emerged from the ground as a zombie, looking Ron menacing. And I just Ron Burgundy'd that right now. looking menacing and opting to have live maggots in his mouth to make the scene more impactful. That is disgusting.
Yeah, that's very gross.
And, yeah. Hodder's presence and commitment to the role left an impression on Buechler, who pitched this new Jason to Frank Mancuso Jr., who totally hated Hodder, by the way.
Did he like anything? He just is a hater this whole fucking time.
It just seems like he was pissed off during this whole production and just didn't like anything. Mm-hmm. So the producer felt he was too small and just physically didn't have the Voorhees look. Interesting. So this is where the duo came up with a compromise. Mancuso Jr. would look at a screen test, and that's where he would make the decision. If he didn't like it, they could always just get CJ Graham again. But Hodder was born to play Jason, and his screen test actually impressed the fuck out of Mancuso just quite a bit.
Yeah. He's got a good presence. He's got a good walk. He's got a good Jason walk.
I like this Jason. I like this Jason probably a little more than CJ Graham, but we'll get to that.
Definitely.
Yeah. The film had to be made fast, like fast and furious, as the release date was quickly approaching. Every interior scene was shot in a studio in L.A., and all the exterior scenes were shot in good old Alabama.
Yeah.
It was a tough shoot. It was a tough shoot, of course, but the hours were, of course, very, very long.
Mm-hmm.
And Hodder's first go as Jason resulted in a lot of stunt work that nearly went horribly wrong.
As is tradition every single Friday the 13th movie. This is the most injury-prone productions we've ever come across.
Gosh. Here we go. So, when a roof collapsed on Hodder for the film's climactic battle, the weight was so much that he landed face first into the wooden floor and was saved by the sturdiness of his mask.
Yeah, he almost crushed his face.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
When Jason falls through the stairs, he nearly missed the stunt steps and hit his head on the regular steps. Oh, geez. He was 2 inches away from concussion territory.
Yeah.
Of course, man.
If you look back at the scene, dude, like the what do you call it, the stunt steps, he's just 2 inches away from it looks bad. Mm. It looks really fucking bad.
Jeez.
Mm-hmm.
I remember watching the film and I was like, ooh, that looked like a pretty good stunt, but, yeah, you know, it looked good. It came out looking, you know, it's sold really well.
It's the guy that ate maggots for a tiny role in a zombie movie, I think. Yeah. You know, he's committed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's committed. This is where, of course, the team also accidentally broke the record for the longest uninterrupted controlled burn in Hollywood history when they set Hodder on fire. Very interesting. While also having him underwater for up to 4 hours at a time without resurfacing. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, 4 hours at a time. They had scuba emergency because they had to bolt him down underwater.
Yeah.
Because otherwise he would float because of the prosthetics. Yep. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, fucking guy.
And of course, despite all the mishaps, Hodder loved his time as Jason and was great with the cast and crew. The wardrobe department even made his mother a special jacket that said, quote, Jason's mom on the back. Mm. That's really cool.
That's nice.
She would wear it regardless of how hot it was outside, and when asked about it, it had stacks of autographed photos from Kane to hand out to fans while she proudly spoke of her son being Jason.
Yeah.
Just like any proud mom should.
I mean, that's definitely almost Mexican mother territory right there.
It would just,
yeah, right? She's like, oh, my son, no, he was an extra in Breaking 2, and here is his headshot.
You know what, dude? Maybe we're just mispronouncing his last name all wrong. Maybe it's Joder.
Oh, there you go. Or Cain be in Spanish.
Cain be Cain.
Cain.
I don't know.
Cain Joder.
Cain Joder.
Mijo.
Oh, God. So anyways, one day... One day hotter, or should I say joder. He walked to his hotel in costume for a quarter mile while someone asked if he was part of a movie. He thought this question was stupid, so he didn't even answer. The person kept pestering, so Hodder got into character, grunted, and did a fake-out lunge toward the now-fleeing fan. Yeah. That's hilarious. The next day, the sheriff was supposed to show up to set, but he never came.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
The kills for this movie were also very graphic, and that was by design. They knew they were going to get some pushback from the MPAA and figured the now finished film will at least have something to fall back on. They didn't realize they were about to have a straight up war with the MPAA. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. This one's bad.
Please. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about Slashing the Slasher here, ladies and gentlemen, because when the new blood made its way to the MPAA, they immediately gave it an X rating. And then one recut. Jeez. Yeah. And then again, it was another X, and then another, and another. And this would actually end up becoming the most censored installment in the entire franchise. Like, hands down.
Wow.
Yeah, with every kill being censored to the point where of almost being removed completely. Director Jean-Carl Buclet publicly protested all of the cuts, actually, but it actually took upwards of, I think, 9 total attempts before the film was finally given an R rating, and I think 9 is a conservative estimate. It probably was more. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dude, like, honestly, it didn't felt that, like, I don't know, it didn't felt like, I mean, I'm watching the finished product. I don't know, this is not that bloody. I mean, they must have cut a shit ton.
Oh, dude. Because
I'm just like...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, they cut a lot.
I mean, the body count was for sure there, but, like, I was just like, okay, yeah, this is probably, like, the least messiest Jason movie I've seen.
Yeah, it definitely was, I would say. But, yeah.
They must have, like, trimmed the fuck out of it then.
It's pretty bad, dude. Like, we'll get into it right now, but right now, the biggest cut actually was to the sleeping bag kill. Although, this is probably the only one that actually worked in the film's favor. Yeah. Because originally, Jason swung the sleeping bag victim against the tree 6 times, and then they negotiated down to 1. But the simplicity actually made it one of Jason's most iconic kills. And 6 times, and they actually covered the tree with razor blades, and they had, like, blood filled in the sack, so it was, like, the bag would be getting bloodier every time they did it. Like, it was pretty gnarly. Yeah. It's pretty fucked up.
This was actually my first time watching this movie. And when it came to this part, I was like, oh, is this the part where the sleeping bag, where he just fucking, like, mutilates her with the freaking tree or something?
Yep. That's
I was like, I got legit excited. I was like, oh, this is the sleeping bag one. Okay, cool.
Like, now I know this movie. Oh, that's funny. Yeah. But of course, unfortunately, all the gruesome kills are mostly lost. As Paramount very quickly destroyed any outtakes and cut scenes, making the director's cut for this film impossible. A rough work print of this does exist, however. They're all available on YouTube. You can see all the kills, and I'm going to tell you right now, they are so much more graphic. Like, it's insane. Nice. Yeah, it's a brutal-ass movie they shot, and we got, like, Baby's First Friday the 13th, like, comparatively.
Mm-hmm. Jeez.
Only some titties, too. Right. Only some titties.
Nice.
But, of course, Friday the 13th was not screened for critics in advance, as they knew the reception wasn't going to be exactly stellar. It does, though, has a 35% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah, with the critical consensus reading. Quote, as lumbering and bereft of conscious thought as its unstoppable star, Friday the 13th Part 7, The New Blood, finds the franchise in desperate need of the title ingredient. Jesus Christ, IMDb. All right.
All right.
I mean, I don't like the movie, but that's a little snotty, guys. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Well, Gene Siskel provided one of the most scathing reviews, saying, quote, the filmmakers have mastered the blood, but not the tedium of all the predictable killings, nor have they eliminated the hate women subtext the entire series of films. End quote. Gene, just get a drink, Gene. It's okay. It's just a movie. It's fine. It's fine. This is actually Webster's part. I wanted her to read it in her very disdainful Jean Siskel voice, but obviously she's out looking for the Lost Ark, you know? The Ark of the Covenant.
The Ark of the Covenant.
She's going to get it, though. It'll be fine. We're all saved. And, of course, Film Frenzy is less wordy, simply stating, this one is simply silly. That's their review. So, pretty on the nose, but that's it.
Yeah.
Now, of course, Friday the 13th Part 7, The New Blood, that's a long title, I keep saying it, opened in a big year for horror, actually, as these fucking heavy hitters here. Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers, Hellbound, wow. Hellraiser 2, A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, Dream Master, and the very first appearance of Chucky in Child's Play, all released in the same year. 1988 was fucking stacked.
Absolutely, yeah. Dude.
That's big.
That is big.
Yeah. Good horror.
That's a hell of a year for horror. Yeah, I was just going to say, hell of a year for horror.
Oh, God, we were infants. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, just over the weekend, just like 2 days ago, me, my mom and dad, my brother, sister-in-law, and my seven-year-old niece revisited the first Child's Play.
What?
And, yeah, this was 2 days ago at my mom's house. And my sister-in-law is like, we think she's old enough now. Let's introduce her to Chucky. And we're like, hey, I'm down. Let's do it. Family movie night? Let's do it. And then we just threw on Child's Play. I mean, this is like me and my mom were on the table, like, you know, she was helping me put together my Macho Man costume. But yeah, we were still watching the Child's Play. Dude, that movie is still awesome. I haven't seen the first Child's Play in a while.
Yeah.
It's still a good one.
It almost feels a little Hitchcockian or like Twilight Zone-y in some ways. I don't know what it is.
Yeah,
it has an old school filmmaking flair to it.
Mm-hmm. And more from that year, Return of Michael Myers is set for my October watch list, and so is Hellraiser 2.
Nice.
Not Elm Street 4. I haven't seen Dream Master in a while. I don't know if I'm going to be able to watch it this month.
Yeah, it's been a long time for me, too. I haven't actually seen Dream Warriors in forever, either.
Dream Warriors rules. I freaking love Dream Warriors.
That's a good one. It's a good month. This is horror month. This is the time.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Watch as many as you can this month, dude. It's awesome. I've been actually encouraging this at work.
Oh, nice.
I've been telling my coworkers, like, yeah, watch a horror flick every month or every day of this month if you can. That'd be awesome.
I'm going to slap something on today.
Like this morning, a couple of coworkers were like, yeah, dude, I finally watched Hellraiser for the first time. And then I'm like, oh, cool. And so it's really cool. It's really cool hearing people actually watching horror films.
Embracing the season. Yeah, I'm with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, now, so did the people, obviously, in May 13th of this year, because the film was actually, it was number one at the box office. But it was a very front-loaded run. And it actually made even less money than Jason Lives. So the original plan, of course, was for Tina to be the protagonist for 3 films. And that was now scrapped. So no more new blood. Just the one blood. That's it. Only one blood. And, of course, Jason made actually less money than most of his horror contemporaries in 1988. I think he was the least grossing compared to everyone there. So it was not a good time for Mr. Voorhees, unfortunately.
All right. Well, smells to me like we have some bad blood.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. All right, let's talk a little bit. Fan reception for Jason's 7th installment has always been, well, let's just say mixed.
Yeah.
And there's no better place to see that than good old Letterboxd.
Hey, we did it.
Let's do it, shall we? Let's do it. We have come to that part of our episode of the podcast where I read my favorite Letterboxd reviews, I guess. That one pulled up.
But they are Phil's favorites. For sure they're Phil's favorites.
But they are my favorites. Yes, they are my favorites. So let's start right here. Friday the 13th Part 7, The New Blood, has a 2.5 out of 5 rating out of 10,000 reviews.
It's right in the middle. Told you it's mixed.
All right. Okay. All right. Yeah, sounds like it. All right. So let's start off with the boy Todd Gaines, who gave this film 2.5 stars, saying, quote, Kane Hodder, weed smoking.
Okay, there's
Cheech and Chong.
There you go.
There's a Cheech and Chong right there. My bad. So let's go. Let's do that again. Todd Gaines, 2.5 stars, says, quote, Kane Hodder, weed whacking the good doctor. Melissa is a real bitch, but a sweetheart. Nick is one of the smartest characters in the entire franchise. Tina is the worst final girl. A WTF ending. The saving grace Robinson's boobs. Or Robin's boobs.
Robin's boobs. Yeah.
Robin's boobs.
Robinson, yeah. Show me those titties.
Robinson. Mrs. Robinson, show me them boobies. Yeah, there's some parts here that I kind of agree with. That ending did kind of suck. Mm-hmm. But it was nice to see Robin's boobs.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm.
Let's continue down this right here. A lot more Letterboxd reviews. PD187 gives it 3 stars, saying, quote, "Most of this is pretty boring till the end where Dollar Store Carrie, whose real name is Linkin Park, just bullies the shit out of Jason."
Yeah.
3 stars.
Yeah, that's pretty true, yeah. though. That's kind of accurate.
On the nose, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, is the name really Linkin Park? I thought that was pretty funny. Mm-hmm. Ashton gives it 2.5 stars, saying, quote, "At this point, maybe it's worth considering nuking Crystal Lake." Just thought.
No, radioactive Jason. Radioactive Jason.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, Ooh. Oh, I don't know, man. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a bad one.
Chernobyl Jason.
Oh, shit. Dad, did we just come up with another good idea?
I know. I think so. Chernobyl Voorhees. Dude, let's fucking... Shit. Dude, we got some banger ideas here.
Dude.
We need to come... When we come back to this episode, we got to write them down and actually put a script together, man.
Yeah, or, okay.
Know, just
like
ChatGPT it.
Right? Like season one of Heroes ending, where like Peter's about to go nuclear in the fucking city, right? But it's Jason Voorhees, and he wants to do it.
Oh my god.
Oh,
that sounds actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, let's continue here. And finally, Oliver Swift gives the film 1.5 stars, saying, quote, "LOL, I want to know how this motherfucker get to space if he can't even leave Crystal Lake after 7 movies.
Okay.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's very funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is quite the leap from Crystal Lake to space. That is hilarious.
Only a couple more movies. It's going to happen.
A couple more? Yeah, a couple more. Yeah. Well, fans and critics weren't the most enthused. Kane Hodder would go on to become the most associated with the hockey mask and quickly was asked to reprise his role. Now, despite the film not being an uproaring success, it still was profitable and it was good enough for Paramount.
You got it.
And even if Hodder was the only one who wanted his name associated with the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of adding another superpower protagonist, the team decided a trip outside of Crystal Lake would be the best direction for the next Friday installment. And unfortunately, the diminishing returns also amounted to a diminished budget.
No.
And it's gonna show.
Yeah.
However, we'll talk about that when we get to the Friday the 13th, Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan. For now, we have a face-off on our hands. Here we go. Face-off
right.
In our hands.
Wow. I will say, Jason Takes Manhattan might actually be one of my favorites, but
I have seen that one, mm-hmm. and I have to say it's also one of my favorite ones too.
Yeah,
it is garbage. It has an iconic boxing match that we'll talk about when we get to recording that. But yeah, I actually really like Jason Takes Manhattan a lot.
Same.
It is very very lame, but holy shit, what a concept.
Yeah, exactly.
I do have to give this one, Part 7, New Blood, some credit for trying something bold by having a Professor Xavier telekinetic powers girl in this.
Yeah, I mean, I
kind of out of left field.
They built the story. They should have probably built it up a little more. I don't know. It was weird because they tried to go so hard with the Jason formula, and then they're like, but you know, she's got to have like a whole backstory here that we're just gonna hammer. God, that doctor. But, you know, we'll talk about the movie soon.
I was just a good... Yeah.
We'll talk about the movie soon.
About that doctor.
We have one game, Phil.
Very true.
We have one game, Phil, that we're going to go ahead and do. And we're going to play Jason versus Blank, 80s edition.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, what do you got for us here, Fuen Sereno?
Well, seeing as Jason nearly fought a few different 80s superstars before settling on knockoff carry, kind of, we're going to see who really can handle Mrs. Voorhees' baby boy.
I love that. Mrs. Voorhees' baby boy.
That's right. Here's a list. Okay, I put a list there twice, so I'm not going to Ron Burgundy it. Here's a list of potential 80s opponents. What we must know is, what advantage do they have against Jason? What disadvantage do they have against Jason? Can they win? If so, how? And if not, how are they going to get taken out? All right. Strength, weakness, do they win? Why? Now, of course, remember, the only 80s versions of these characters, because this is, you know, there's going to be plenty more verses coming up as Jason enters the 90s and 2000s. Mm-hmm. But let's go ahead and see who our opponents are. So,
okay.
First opponent, Phil, your thoughts here. How's it going to go if it's Jason versus Pinhead from Hellraiser?
Okay, so Jason versus Pinhead. Let's start off with Pinhead's advantages right here. Obviously, he has the lamentation. He's got the box. He's got the chains. He's got he's immune to pain. Like you can, like Jason can like take his machete and slice him, and he'll be like, "Ha ha ha! This does nothing to me, boy."
Yes.
But holy shit, though, man. The disadvantage that Pinhead has is lack of speed. I mean, have you seen Pinhead move? He does not move very fast. He walks. I'm not saying he walks like a slasher. He walks like, not like Michael Myers. He walks like, he takes like two steps. I've never seen my boy Pinhead move for anything. So this is where, like, if he wanted to, Jason can really just like take a swing at him really fast before those chains pop up.
Yeah, that's a good point, huh?
Yeah. Can Pinhead win? I believe so. Because if we learned anything from this film, Friday the 13th Part 7, The New Blood, Jason, he was underneath the lake. What was holding him down? Chains. Chains can really hold him down. So, boom. I think Pinhead will definitely win. If so, and if not, how does he get taken out? I don't think Pinhead can be taken out in this one, though.
No.
I think Pinhead, even though, like, I think Jason would be a worthy opponent for sure, but I think it's Pinhead's tactics and overall intelligence and his use of logic and pain and his overall creativity could really take out Jason for this.
You know,
so I'm going to go with Pinhead.
Okay. I think what might get him taken out a little bit here, despite, you know, sticks and stones being able to break his bones with chains and whips inside of him, obviously, as good old Rihanna would say. Pinhead is just too goddamn thirsty, you know? I think he's, you know, him not being able to get into Jason's psyche for some of maybe the more outlandish ways he would mess with them might put him in a compromising position. But I think you're right, though. I think if it comes down to just restraining Jason with his favorite tools and toys, you know what? Pinhead's going to do it. He's going to do it. Mm-hmm. He's just got to be quick enough. So it depends on who gets the first jump. But, you know, if Jason goes after his limbs and stuff and whatever, he may keep a little Pinhead box or something. But I don't think Jason's that creative. So, yeah, I give it to Pinhead. Give it to Pinhead.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right. But we're going to take a whole left turn here. How would the King of Pop, Michael Jackson, handle Jason Voorhees?
My gosh.
The 80s version, all right? When, you know, before... Okay. The conditions and accusations, obviously.
Damn it, because I had a good one. Oh, no.
Those weren't until the 90s, Phil.
We're keeping it 80s. All right. Okay, so how would Jason do against Michael Jackson? I think Michael Jackson was already at the height of his glory right here, right? Mm-hmm. He can... As you can see, he can transform into two things. He can transform into a werewolf, or he can transform into a zombie. Yeah. Where I think a werewolf, he might have those predatorial instinct kills where he can hunt down Jason instead of being the hunted, right? Mm. However, zombie mode Jackson, this is probably a disadvantage for him. This is an easy, like, chop him into little pieces, even though, like, Michael Jackson will still be alive, unless... You know, Jason shoves the machete into the brain. Mm-hmm. But if we just had human form Michael Jackson, no werewolf, no thriller, zombie stuff, holy shit, that would be a match I would love to see, because he would moonwalk his way out of any machete slashes.
Moonwalking for the slashes.
Yeah. He would, dude, can you imagine dance fighting, dude? Dance fighting Jason? He'd be too quick.
Yep. Oh! he's not even working.
After he sweeps Jason off his feet, Jason falls to the ground, And Michael Jackson will have to do Smooth Criminal tip over to reach for the machete, mm-hmm. picks up the machete off the ground, and he does another Smooth Criminal tilt down into Jason as he decapitates Jason. Boom. Michael Jackson. I'm going Michael Jackson.
You know what? I agree. I think fantastical, you know, music video Michael Jackson may have a tough time. He can't get Jason mm-hmm. to dance with him. Clearly he's a mm-hmm. zombie. And in those rules, it's the John Landis thriller world. So, you know, mm-hmm. Jason has his own rules. And he's playing by Jason's rules in that particular fashion. But regular-ass Michael Jackson, yes, he can avoid every hit because that is a dynamic mover. Mm-hmm. But also, I think Michael Jackson was so big in the 80s that even Jason Voorhees is going to be like, Michael Jackson, holy shit. that's what I think is going to happen. He's going to get one signed copy of Thriller, and he's going back to the lake. That's it.
Oh, my God. Yep. Michael Jackson wins by Starstruck Jason.
By Starstruck Jason. That's right. He's, like, trying to kill him at first, and then he sees the moves happen, and like, oh! And then he's like, oh, I know that guy. And then that's it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's good. That's good. I like that. Michael Jackson
gets it. Okay. We got another 80s boy, though. Mm-hmm. Mr. John Rambo. So, Sly Stallone, John Rambo, yes.
Okay. This, I think, is going to be kind of a tough one. I think the disadvantage that John Rambo has here is that he's human. He is a killing machine. The army, or was he a Marine? I can't remember. I think he was just a soldier.
Yeah.
Molded him into like this killing machine who can camouflage, who can just operate with all of his senses. He is the kind of man who could like live, breathe, and eat in the wild, in Mother Nature. Mm. The dude will poop out in the woods and wipe his ass with a pine cone. You know what I'm saying? Like, he'll be okay. Because that's the kind of a man he is.
Yeah, he's built for the forest.
He's built for the woods, yes. However, so is Jason. If anything from Jason lives, and even this film, the dude can survive in nature too.
Yeah.
And he does not need food. He is like, dude, when the telekinetic lady removed Jason's mask, that dude looked like a straight up just zombie who hasn't had food in like 10 years.
Yeah.
We also see a little bit of predatorial killing skills. Like, Jason can throw that machete from a far distance. He has really good aim.
And
But so does Rambo.
Yeah, but Jason can teleport, you know? He just walks and all of a sudden he's skipping yards out of nowhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Jason on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, Rambo can shoot all these bows and arrows at him all he wants, but it's not going to do anything to him.
No. I'm with you on that one. I think... Mm-hmm. Again, Jason is impervious to a lot of this stuff anyways. It took some psychic lady to take him out before. I don't think Rambo knows the lore, so he's not going to be like, oh, well, if I take him back to the lake and blah, 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 blah. Like, he's not a thinker like that. Rambo's moment-to-moment survival. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have a number one record like Michael Jackson to really, like, awestruck him, you know? He just looks like Sylvester Stallone, which, I don't know. Jason seems more of, like, a pop music guy. I don't know if he's an action movie guy, so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Rambo, you're done. Sorry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going with Jason on this one.
We already talked about it, but like, let's just see.
Oh, I cannot
let's
wait.
Feel
for
it
this
out.
One.
Let's see how they do it. How do Cheech and Chong actually fare versus Jason?
All right, Cheech and Chong versus Jason. I'm immediately going to go with Cheech and Chong.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to win right here. Disadvantages? I don't think they have any. Probably physically they can't probably outrun him or anything like that, but holy shit, they have one big magic power, and that is the power of the ganja.
That's right.
Dude, and not just the ganja too. They will give him psychedelics like how Cheech ate a whole bunch of acid in the car, and I believe it was Up in Smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, wait. And then Chong was like, wait, that wasn't my aspirin. Man, you just took a whole bunch of acid, man. They will fuck up Jason so much that they will transport him into another dimension. He will trip out. He will trip out so much. But not like Pinhead's Lament configuration. I think this is like the power of Mother Nature fighting back at Jason with the power of psychedelics and, of course, weed. Lots of weed. They're going to smoke him out, And that's the part where they can just let him, like, just chill right there in the woods by himself, to the point where he goes permanently mentally damaged, his everything. He's just permanently mentally damaged.
I think Jason's going to have a lot of revelations on that acid. He's going to be like, well, did my mom really love me? And, like, should I have just died in the lake? And blah, blah, blah. That's going to have, like, a big psychological effect on him, for sure. And, again, I think Jason's going to be very used to taking out weed-smoking teenagers, but he never had an opponent like Cheech and Chong, who are often near each other anyways. And the sheer smoke cloud, Jason has no approach. He has no approach. He's a slow stalker anyways. Even if he goes fast, I mean, they're working on Scooby-Doo rules. Like, they run. So, yeah. No,
yeah.
Cheech and Chong win, hands down, probably more than anyone else in this list so far.
I believe so. Yeah. I like that. I like what you went to, the route where he has, like, a change of heart. He's like, you know what, man? All this killing shit, I'm going to stop it. Yeah, dude, he changes his career, pivots his whole career.
He does, you know? Maybe he starts advocating for psychedelics, and he's like, I used to kill teenagers all the time. But now I just like to get a little high in my backyard.
Oh my,
I don't
gosh.
Care that teenagers are fucking before marriage. That's not my issue anymore, really.
Why did I ever care about this kind of stuff?
That's funny. That's okay, well, I mean, we're running. I put so many just so that we could pick. Oh, but I'm only going to pick two more.
All right, go for it.
But I really want your take on these next two. These last two are fine. So, Jason, this is the big question here. Jason versus Michael Myers. How does this go? We got to have one horror.
I remember having this discussion as a kid where I was like, oh, who would win, Jason or Michael Myers? Jason or Michael Myers? Me being the Michael Myers fan, I would always go Michael Myers fan. I would always go Michael Myers.
Yeah.
However, I'm trying to put my bias to the side here. What's Michael's disadvantage? And we're sticking to the 80s.
80s, exactly. Remember the rules. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, there is no Cult of Thorn here. That was going to be my original, like, you know, backup. But I can't pull that here.
No.
However, here in the 80s, he was not really established so much as, like, this, as an entity of evil or somebody that just can't. He was still kind of labeled as human in a way, right?
Mm-hmm.
But even though Dr. Loomis would say, oh, that part of him died years ago, you're talking to him as though he was human. No. There is still, like, parts of him where there could be some, like in Halloween 5, where he can kind of teleport a little bit in a way.
They're both teleporters, so this is a teleport fight.
They both are teleporters.
Sure.
They're both silent killers. This is gonna be a tough one.
Wow.
Let's see. Jason does have the bigger machete, the bigger knife. He's got a machete. When Michael Myers has a kitchen knife. But if Michael Myers pulls out that scythe that he had in Halloween 5, that could probably be a good weapon.
I mean, Michael Myers is also more of a stalker, though. He didn't just, like,
really
run up to people. He's, you know, if Michael Myers gets the jump on Jason, he's going to strangle him. He ain't going to strangle him for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. In Halloween 4, he took a shotgun and, you know, impaled somebody with a shotgun.
That was pretty gnarly. That's true. You know, they're pretty good, I think. Closely matched in the 80s.
This is a very close match, to be honest, man.
I'm going to jump the gun a little bit here and be like, well, Michael Myers' family is still alive and kind of the motivator right there. Where Jason Voorhees' mama is just poisoning his mind with memory. And I think that disregard or lack of, like, groundedness in the actual world itself might help Jason in this scenario. I think so. Mm-hmm. I think that'll help him be a little more relentless. Where Michael Myers has shit to do. So,
true. Jason also cannot be drowned because he spent, like, an entire movie underwater. Like, between 6 and 7, he was underwater for, like, what would you say, like, a year? Maybe longer than that?
Exactly. He's able to hibernate.
Yeah, so he's able to hibernate. Michael, I think he would drown. Yeah, he would drown.
Yeah, he's got a lot more mortal issues.
I don't think he's a bit... Yeah, he definitely is more mortal compared to Jason. So if Jason were to fight in the lake with Michael, like, I don't think he's very much of a big fan of water, so that's a huge disadvantage right there for Michael.
Mm-hmm.
If the environment allowed them to fight in Camp Crystal Lake, if the stage was set in Camp Crystal Lake, I think this is a Jason victory for sure. However, if it was set in Haddonfield, the Man in Black was introduced in Halloween 5.
Yeah, at the end.
He could Tommy gun his way all the way to hell.
You know, Myers knows the lay of the land in Haddonfield. Mm-hmm. Like, that's his domain right there. Mm-hmm. Jason's going to be all willy-nilly and killing motherfuckers, going to Hollywood Halloween shops mm-hmm. and taking hockey masks and shit. I don't think he's going to have as much self-control as Crystal Lake. He ain't got the woods.
I think Michael would have a chip on his shoulder and have something to prove. He's like, look, dude, I came first. Your creators made you based off of me. Except they were trying to rip you off. So I think you'd have something more to prove.
It's like, not only that, your work is sloppy. You're out here killing in public like some fucking animal over here. I'm here trying to make sure that the mystery is still alive. Nah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no, I don't know, this might be a tie. This might be a tie, to be honest with you.
This is going to be a good one.
It's very dependent on the scenario.
I'm really thinking about who would win 80s Jason or 80s Michael Myers. Damn, this is a...
It's just, dude, it's unstoppable force versus immovable object situation here. I don't know.
Seriously. Mm-hmm. If anything, they might just go out for a beer together. Yeah. Quits right there and just call it a night. Or probably just fight Mecha Godzilla after.
Oh, you know? That'd be great. Jason'd be like, so shotgun, huh? It's like, I've been shot with a couple of... You stab somebody with it? Yeah. Michael's like, yeah, I stabbed somebody with it. I didn't know how to use the trigger.
I think, damn, I can't come... can we just say a draw?
I say draw, and they're getting a beer with each other, for sure. That's actually happening. That's totally going down. All right, draw. We're doing draw.
That
makes sense. Mm-hmm.
I love that for them. Yeah.
Now, I got one more immortal character from the 80s
us
to go through. And, it's the fucking Hulkster. I'm not talking about the Incredible.
When it comes crashing down and it hurts inside. Dude. Wow.
Oh, yeah, Hogan.
Hulk Hogan versus Jason Voorhees.
Oh,
damn.
That's going to be a battle. Yes.
80s Hulk Hogan. Well, let me tell you something, brother. I'm going to take you all the way to Camp Crystal Lake so you can stop killing all these teenagers, brother. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take these 22-inch pythons, dude, and I'm going to wrap them around your skinny little hockey mask neck, and I'm going to choke you out. And then I'm going to drop a big old leg drop right on you there, brother. What you going to do when the Hulkamania runs wild on Camp Crystal Lake, brother? Yeah.
He's like, what you been eating? Fish and maggots down there? I've been eating my vitamins every day.
See all these little Hulkamaniacs and that you've been killing Camp Crystal Lake. They obviously didn't say their prayers and eat their vitamins, dude. That's not really cool, man. So I'm here to avenge him. He's here to avenge all the Hulkamaniacs he killed. And all those Hulkamaniacs were like, you know, camp counselors and stuff like that he's been killing off.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, and then I also heard you were fighting that telekinetic girl, dude. That telekinetic chick, she don't mess around, brother. Dude, I'm here to help her out, dude. Dude, this is going to be... all right, so... good match here. This is another good match here.
I mean, advantage, though, Hulk Hogan, I think, is going to be able to baffle Jason Voorhees so much with his on-demand promos. I don't think Jason's going to know how to handle... Some giant motherfucker in a yellow ass attire ripping his shirt off and just shouting at him. That might throw him off compared to his regular fodder, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, if I had some dude dressed in yellow and red waving a big American flag like that at me, yelling at me and cutting a promo on me, I'd be intimidated. I'm like, I'm taking a step back, dude. I don't know who this guy is. Jason would be like, oh, fuck, dude, he's patriotic as fuck.
I mean, dude. The teleportation's not going to phase him either. This motherfucker's fought the Ultimate Warrior.
It's like, it's like, oh, you try to swing that machete at me, man. I'm going to take this American flag and shove it right into your hockey face mask, dude. Dude, so the big question is, what you going to do when Hulkamania runs wild in Camp Crystal Lake? The Hulk is a lot bigger than Jason. Jason's a big boy, but Hulk is big, dude. Mm-hmm. Dude, he was huge. I think he's going to do a simple power slam. Ooh, a power slam on the wooden dock. Leg drop his ass. They both break the dock. They both fall into the water. And, dude, like, we all think, like, damn, who won that one? Like, oh, shit, there's only one winner is going to come out of that lake, dude. And the only thing you see is that American flag coming out.
And he's not even swimming up. He's like elevated up in a pose.
He's just elevating up, dude. Still waving the American flag up there, dude. And he comes back. And he's like, yeah, dude, I just leg dropped his ass all the way to hell. Now that's how you send Jason to hell, dude.
And it's going to come up, dude, in 3 seconds. Yep. It takes because the three count happened and then he's popping back up to celebrate. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. No, I think so, man. I think that's how you do it. No, that's how you do it.
Mm-hmm. And even if Jason wins, like, kind of seemed like he was going to win, Hulk Hogan would do some, like, business shenanigans to make sure that doesn't happen. He's in business for himself. So, yeah.
I think... Dude, okay. All right, let's give Jason some hope here. Okay, at one point, referee Earl Hebner shows up, right? And so, like, and this is, like, 80s Earl Hebner where he wore the blue and the black bow tie. So let's say in New Blood, Jason was like crushing someone's skull. Remember that?
Yeah.
The dude outside the van. Okay. Let's say he's doing that with the Hulkster. He's really giving the Hulkster a run for his money, right? Hulk Hogan is sitting down on the ground while Jason has both of his hands around Hogan's like thick skull. Jason is giving it everything he's got into trying to crush his skull. And it looks like our boy Hulk Hogan is like passed out, right?
Yeah.
Referee Earl Hebner lifts up the Hulk Hogan's arm just to see if he's still alive. Boom, it drops once. Uh-oh, there's one. Referee Earl Hebner lifts up Hulk Hogan's arm one more time up in the air. Boom, Hulk Hogan's arm drops one more time. Dude,
and
that's
Jason's
two.
Jason's looking around, too. He's like, holy shit, is that one going
to
happen?
Jason is trying to crush Hulk Hogan's skull, and this might be it. If Earl Hebner lifts up the arm, and if Hogan's arm drops dead one more time, then the match is over.
Oh, that's a pop.
And this is
this
is where Earl Hebner lifts up Hogan's arm. It falls slightly, but it lifts up and it starts shaking. And then Hulk Hogan is waving a no. He's signaling a no with that one arm. He's signaling, no way, brother. And he starts getting enough energy. He's hulking up, dude.
He's hulking up.
He's hulking up. And then we have commentators. We have Vince McMahon on commentary. Oh, it's not over yet, ladies and gentlemen. Hulk Hogan is not finished. Jason's shaking his head like, no, 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 no. And then, like, dude, Hulk Hogan gets up, removes freaking Jason's hands off of his skull. He picks up Jason up in the air, body slams him onto the dock, and then the leg drop. They both fall through the lake, and then that's where the American flag wraps up. And that's how the match ends.
Okay, all right. I like the idea that hulking out is his get-out-of-jail-free card in this one, because that was how it worked. That was how it worked. Yeah, I think 80s Hogan, again, there's just no way to top him, honestly. So, yeah, 80s Hogan wins this one. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Jason, he only won against Rambo. He tied with Myers. And honestly, the rest of these guys, they definitely got something on them. So...
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There you go. All right. That was it. We found out which A's icons can go toe to toe with Mrs. Voorhees baby boy. So that's good.
I love that. We should start calling him Mrs. Voorhees baby boy.
Oh, I'm so down. Ugh. Okay. We only have time for like two questions in the rating. So we're going to go. Real quick here. What are your thoughts, Phil, on Friday the 13th, part 7, The New Blood?
This was not my favorite one at all. This is kind of far down there. As like the Letterboxd review said, it was kind of boring. I was just like, all right, cool. Let's get to the fireworks factory.
Yeah. You know,
let's give me the, all right, cool. We know who the final chick is. Oh, the final, dude, I thought the final girl, telekinetic route was very interesting. I give it that. I was like, oh, you're introducing some mythical powers? Oh, she's a mutant, dude. She's Professor Xavier, dude. Hell yeah, brother. this one's okay. It's definitely not the first Jason movie I'd recommend anybody.
No.
I think I would recommend Jason X before recommending Part 7,
I kind of have a soft spot for Jason X. So, yeah. But even I'm almost cynical. I feel like I always skip this one. I always skip this one.
I've never seen it, to be honest. I've never seen it up until now. I've known about it so, like, throughout my entire life. I've seen that poster so many times. I've seen the clips of somebody swiping or the mask ripping off Jason's face, and you're exposed to like this zombie looking thing as Jason's face. I just never knew from what Jason movie that was from. But yeah, this is my first time seeing this. Not a big fan. It was still. It was, I don't know, it's like a same old, same.
It really does feel like the same old, same old. With the psychic stuff, even then, she just have regular-ass teenage problems still. Yeah. So it's not that big a deal. Kane Hodder's great, though. He definitely.
I thought he was. Yeah, I thought he was good.
He moves good as Jason. He mm-hmm. he moves real good. I still think the great guy Jason. Before him was also really good though. So it's kind of tough to pick between them. Jason Lives guy was very good too. But yeah, I don't know, dude. This one, I'd never like. I find it with the exception of Hodder being awesome, and the sleeping bag kill, and like that. The final fight is actually pretty good too. The whole rest of the movie, I keep forgetting everything. Like I, you know, the characters are dumb.
Characters are very dumb.
Yeah, the doctor's kind of shitty, like in a way that you want him to get murked so bad, and he only gets like a stabbing, and that's it. Like it's he deserves a much worse death. It just 100%. All the backstory sucks. Like it just sucks. It did. But I mean, it's so weird because it has such iconic moments. Like that again, Sleep Bad Kill's great. It probably has the most diverse amount of teenagers that he's taken out. Yep. And then, yeah, the Jason first character concept is kind of cool, and Hodder moves good. He needs more to work with. He definitely does better in the next movie. The next movie is much more like a Hodder showcase for sure.
Nice.
Yeah, good. So, I'm sorry, man. You're just a pit stop before we get to Manhattan, so not for me.
Yeah, honestly. Ooh, I like the way you worded that. Nice. Thank you. Very good.
Yeah,
it's very good.
A little pit stop before Manhattan, but yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so Phil, we're going to have one more fun question here. We have been promoted to film producers, and our task with with making a legitimate Academy Award-winning Friday the 13th movie. How do we do it, and which awards does this actually win at the end, if we get any?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Who are we casting? What's the story here?
First of all, we're going to get Roger Deakins to be the cinematographer.
Shit. Oh. Okay.
So we're going to get some classy cinematography. This is before he shot with the Coen brothers. This is before he shot Shawshank Redemption. This is before he even gets anywhere near Blade Runner 2049. Mm. This is going to be shot by Roger Deakins. And so it's going to be already a beautiful flick. Who do I want to direct now? And does this have to be 80s?
Nope. Okay. So anybody? Deakins can have his like Villeneuve era too.
Okay.
So.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. And you know what? Let's just go with Denis Villeneuve.
Denis Villeneuve? Yeah, you think so? Oh, Denis Villeneuve.
He's directing this. Oh. He's directing this. We're gonna get Jake Gyllenhaal to be the male protagonist.
Can he be Tommy Jarvis? Jarvis?
Yeah. All right, let's do that. All right. Okay. Now, who's gonna be our final girl?
Oh, shit.
Let's see. Who do you think?
I mean, Academy Award-winning caliber actress.
Do we want to go with someone like Florence Pugh? Do we want to go with somebody a little younger, perhaps?
If Gyllenhaal's going to be like the boy, then maybe I'll see like a Natalie Portman or something, you know? Just give her a little. She's just so like, I don't know. Nice. Like there's just something you would never want. There's no way you'd expect Natalie Portman to be killed in a movie. So
okay,
I don't know.
Could we have a hermit, and could that hermit be either Hugh Jackman or Harrison Ford?
A hermit, like in the movie? Yeah.
Kind of like a guy that's just like who's heard all the legends of Camp Crystal Lake.
Well, for was Villeneuve, I was actually thinking Benicio del Toro.
Ooh!
Benicio is our guy that knows about Jason. He's our guy that knows about Jason. He knows about the legends there. Tommy
Beautiful
Jarvis.
Beautiful choice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mr. Jarvis is there looking for his family. He's got a little family connection over there, but, you know.
Some easy disposable bodies that we can throw at him. We can have, like, Zendaya and Timothée Chalamet.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, kill them all. That's good. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. And let's see.
Get Shia LaBeouf as like a drug dealer or something. Get him taken out too. That'd be good. But they all have to have really Oscar worthy stories, so they have to have deep stories.
Yeah.
They gotta have deep stories, you know. Shia LaBeouf's a really troubled drug dealer. Basically, just the kids from Euphoria. Let's actually have all their backstories just transplanted on different actors, and then use that, and they just get murked. So there we go.
Okay, boom. We have ourselves a flick with that.
This is good. We're doing pretty good.
Yeah. We already know it's going to look beautiful. It's going to be well acted. It's going to have a stellar cast, well directed. I think we got ourselves a.
You know, we got to have a good theme here, though. It's Villeneuve. He's very, very high concept with his his themes okay. here, you know?
Do you remember in Prisoners how there was this... The overall story is these kids get kidnapped and they all think it's Paul Dano and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What if we have something like that and we all think it's Jason? Ooh. You know, the legend of Jason. But it turns out to be something bigger than Jason. What if Jason is just like a pawn?
Shit.
And maybe we can... All right, if we're doing... And maybe... Maybe we can actually bring back Mrs. Voorhees.
I like it. I like it.
Jason and Mrs. Voorhees finally team up. Did they ever team up in a movie before?
I can't remember, to be honest with you. Yeah, maybe.
No, she was already dead. She was already dead. That's right.
Mm-hmm. What if she been living in this woods the whole time?
And yeah, what if we actually change it up?
Dude, okay. Concept here. She's been trying to reinforce her values on the people of Crystal Lake that go to this camp, but they're so debaucherous that, like, he does not... Like, he's taking out anybody who does not adhere to, like, Judeo-Christian values. And that's how... it's a commentary on religion here. And with the drug dealing with Shia LaBeouf and the fucking with Zendaya. And Timothy Chalamet just being, like, kind of, like, sexually ambiguous. So she's like, possibly gay. So, like, all these things happening right here. And Jason is taking out people whose values don't adhere to traditional America. And then we get that reveal at the end. But Jason has to learn that what he's been doing is wrong. And he has to kill his own mother.
Dude!
Huh?
Wow.
Shot by Roger Deakins.
Wow. Bro.
Hey.
Dude, we've been coming up with fire ideas all episode long, dude. This is probably the best one.
Right? Because the movie's so bad.
Yeah.
Having to think of better ways to make this seventh movie.
Yeah. The bar is kind of set in hell a little bit here.
Yeah, definitely.
As Webster would say.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man. God, I love that theme you just came up with.
There we go. Hey, yeah, the spot, baby. With Benicio, it's just like, he felt it was so hopeless. But, Benicio's probably gets the last shot, I would say.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. That's really great.
All right, we did it. All right, now what do we win, actually, with this? Because the Academy is very not about horror movies. But you know what? I think they're going to give it some of the performances. Wait.
Yeah, I think
who's our Mrs. Voorhees?
I was just going to ask that question right now. Damn.
Toni Collette.
Who... Oh my god, dude.
Toni Collette is Mrs. Voorhees?
This could be the horror film where she finally wins an Oscar.
That's the one. It's the makeup for Hereditary.
For Hereditary, thank you. This is like, you know what? We fucked up, guys. We should have given it to Hereditary, but this Friday the 13th banger, holy shit, best actress, Toni Collette. Boom.
Bro. All right, we're killing it.
Wow.
Damn, we did with Villeneuve getting a little nod there, too, for this is, Shit. Will be another good director. Villeneuve is occupied. How about Cary Fukunaga also?
Oh, look at you.
Huh?
All right.
Oh, Mr. True, what do you call it?
True Detective.
True Detective. You know, give that True Detective vibe to it.
All right, what about music? We need a composer.
Shit.
Do we want to go with the dude that's been making the Christopher Nolan music?
Hans lately? Zimmer?
No, Ludwig.
Oh, yeah.
Ben Gorson, I think his name is.
No, that's Ludwig a good choice.
He did the music for Mandalorian and Dune.
Bro.
Or do we want to go with a Danny Elfman? Is Danny Elfman too on brand?
No, Danny Elfman, he's too offbeat. I don't think it's going to work.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to work. But I do like the idea of... Or even the same guy who scored Sicario. That guy was, that's a good fucking score. But I do picture this scene where...
We could go with Hans Zimmer, too.
Yeah, because that opening, all these have the recap in the beginning. So that musical score has to be the shit.
Yeah.
That's going to be good. And we're all going to assume Mrs. Voorhees is dead. And now at some point, she's going to pop up as, like, Toni Collette's going to pop out of the woods as this person, like, that knows shit. And she's like, da-da-da. And she'd be like, and his name... was Jason, and then fucking Jason pops up behind, and people are just like, they're in cahoots?
I love that. Dude, who's going to be Jason? Who's going to be our Jason?
Oh, shit.
We need a big guy.
We do need a big
Roman
guy.
Reigns?
No, Roman Reigns is Jason Voorhees?
Do we need somebody beefier? Someone bigger? Because Roman Reigns is a big guy.
He's a pretty big guy. That's true.
What about Kane?
Bring Kane back. I don't know. I mean, with
See
Toni
no evil?
Collette. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, with Toni Collette. Yeah.
You gotta look reasonable.
We need somebody. Maybe we don't see, like, well, how about this, dude? Denis Villeneuve, if we go with him, he has collaborated a lot with Batista.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. The Animal? I'm with it. I'm with Dave Batista.
I think so. Batista as Jason?
Without saying a word, too, he can voicelessly act. Yeah. I think he's going to emote himself. He's a wrestler. He knows how to do it for the camera.
And maybe we have a face reveal at the end. The mask is probably removed or something, or ripped off or something, and we see like a deformed face, you know, Elephant Man style Dave Batista or something.
Yeah. You know? Oh, dude. Our movie's awesome.
This is great. This is really good stuff.
This is good. This is a great idea. This actual movie's fucking terrible, but this is a good idea. Yeah. This is all right. I'm glad this is on record. All right. What would you think? We're good. We win the Oscar. I think with this, we're winning. Uh-huh. We're getting taken top prize for sure, but Colette is for sure actually getting
Colette. Award. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for her amazing performance in this Friday the 13th movie that we just put together.
Yeah, exactly. Just right now. Purely improvised. That was really good. Shit. Yeah.
I would say, I mean, the Academy also, you know, they, like you said, it's, you know, they don't really take horror seriously, but if they were, they would, this would be the one.
I think so.
Yeah, man.
Call us. Writer strike's ending. All right. Yeah. It's over. We can do it. We can do it. Producers?
Yeah, I think this is it. We are producers,
man. Let's hop on it. All right.
I'm down.
well, we're here. Let's top it off here. What would you rate Friday the 13th Part 7, The New Blood, out of 5 sleeping bag kills?
Oh, man, this is like I'm going to say, like 1.75?
Dude, okay. I was going to say 2, but I actually think 1.75 is a little better.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't really like this one. I was just kind of falling asleep towards the end, too.
Yeah.
I was watching it and paying attention. It's just, I just was not feeling this one. It was just like, it's like, all right, I've seen this already. It's like, you know, I expect nothing more from, like, a Part 7, maybe a Friday the 13th, you know? It's,
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not gonna watch it again for a while, I feel like. I got my fill watching... My fill, fuck. I got my fill watching this one. God damn it. Yeah, it's not for me, man. It's like... There's only a very small... Not even a handful. Like, a couple of fingers full of, like, good parts here. And the movie's just a slog. I'm giving 1.75. Hotter in the fucking kill with the sleeping bag. Salvage the movie.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite part of the whole movie, yeah. Those five seconds of sleeping bag thumpness.
Yep, thumping. That's right. But you know what? It produced some fun little bits there, so I'm with that. That's okay. Yeah. But yeah, honestly, I've seen Jason Takes Manhattan so many more times, and I can't wait for us to cover that one. This one, again, it's just going to go right with part 5 for me, where you just, it happened, and that's cool. Adios. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's it. That was our episode on Friday the 13th, part 7, The New Blood. And this is, of course, The New Blood here, rocking out for October. We got a movie next week, but I don't remember what it is, so I'm not going to hype it. And I'm too far away from my browser to really check what it is. But I assure you, Webster is writing it. She will be back. It will be a great time. And it'll be something that we haven't covered or that I know I haven't seen yet. So, hey, it's October. Mm-hmm. We're full of surprises. Happy Friday the 13th, everybody. This was your episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Anthony. You can find me at Hyrulean Hustler. Or you can find me on the NPC.gaming podcast. Or NPC Gaming Podcast. That's NPC.gaming.pod on Instagram. I can say words. Where I talk about video games every 2 weeks with fellow Horrible People's Network member James and, of course, Alex Cordova. So where can people find you, Phil?
I am also, you can find me on Instagram. I post a lot of nonsense over there at @Phil_Acevedo. Also have a YouTube channel that I sometimes visit here and there and add some videos in there. Some stuff that I do behind the camera, some stuff that I do and I just talk about movies on my YouTube channel. It's also just Philip Acevedo. Or is it Phil Acevedo? I think it's just Phil Acevedo. That just shows how much attention I put to my YouTube channel. But if you want to watch some videos that I've made recently, they're on the YouTube channel. But yeah, those are the two places where you can find me these days.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been a production of the Horrible People's Network. You can find us on Instagram at @HORRBLE People's Network, and you can do the same for this podcast if you haven't already. It's Orble People's Podcast. She's so good at that shit, I can't remember. Webster's out saving the world right now. So, you know, with that, she's figuring out the solution to clean energy, all the good stuff. She'll be back next week, and the world will be a better place, I'm sure. But with that, just remember, if your friend displays telekinetic powers, you know, they're probably going to get you killed. So don't even worry about it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
All right. Peace out.
Later, everybody. Peace.